Welcome back to the show. I have EDF Renewables on the podcast, and we covered a couple segments, and we really want to get into this thing today. I have my new best friend, Kevin, on the line, and he is in charge. You're the development manager, right, Kevin?
That's right, yeah. I'm kind of in charge of the development of this project, which includes land acquisition and permitting. Basically, all the activities up until the project goes to construction. And at that point, there will be somebody managing construction who will take over the overall responsibility of the project.
So just to bring the listener that might be listening to this one and not the previous couple, let's bring them up to speed. EDF Renewables is bringing a solar farm to Heartland, New York, right here in Niagara County. And this thing is massive. And Kevin was kind enough to figure out in football field size how big it is. 1,500 football fields this thing is going to be in Heartland County. That really puts it in. And what is that, 2,000 acres did we figure out?
That's right, yeah, 2,000 acres, and there's 1.3 acres in a football field. So that's how we got the 1,500 football fields.
Yep. So this thing is going to pick up where the coal generation left off, and we're going to be drawing energy from the sun. How cool is that for New York? So we wanted to talk about the benefits to, as usual, what is in it for us and what's in it for me. So let's start at a national level, Kevin. I mean, how does this benefit the United States?
Yeah, that's a great question. So more and more countries around the world are realizing that maybe there's certain issues that need to be addressed. And one of those issues is the rising temperatures around the world due to climate change, which is due to the release of carbon into the atmosphere. So some people believe this concept and some don't. But generally speaking, there's been a push for bringing or integrating solutions to this issue. And one of those solutions is more renewable energy to offset the burning of fossil fuels to produce electricity.
And we won't go into the political side of things, because it seems like people that don't believe in it or do believe in it, it turns into a political hot button item, and we'll stay away from that. But me personally, I buy into it, and I'm not one of those conspiracy guys. I believe it. I'm watching the world change before my very eyes, and the evidence is right in front of you. Now, is this just a cycle that the Earth goes through every few thousand years? Maybe. Or are we causing it? I guess that's a big question. But either way, I believe in it. So as far as on a national level, we're bringing solar energy into New York State, into Niagara County, and we're ultimately helping the country, which helps the world. So that's the national level. What about on a state level for New York State?
Yeah, on a state level, New York State has committed to generating 70% of its electricity using renewable energy sources by 2030. So this project we're proposing in Heartland would be one of the projects that would enable New York State to meet its goals. And you know, some people that we visit often have maybe other ideas for the siting of renewable energy. And I think what it really boils down to is we know that these projects will be needed. The question is, where should they be sited? And when we talk to communities, one of the first conversations we have is that, this is going to help bring new developments and bring new revenues to the local economy. The decision people need to make is, do they want those revenues and those benefits to be hosted locally in their own community, or is it better off that these projects are in other communities and they get the benefits?
Right, right. So on the state level, it's good for New York State. It puts us on par. And I have to believe that New York State, and I've been here 25 years, we're probably the most aggressive state, maybe beside California, to stay on top of things like this. So this puts us in line with our goal, our end goal. Did you say 70% renewable energy by what year?
By the year 2030.
So, I mean, that 70% of our power, everything, when you turn on a light switch, it's 70% of that by then is amazing. I mean, that's a big undertaking. Do you know where we are right now as far as percentage-wise? Is it 35%? Or is it 10%?
Yeah, I believe right now it's about a third of the electricity in New York State generated by renewable energy. And that includes, you know, the energy coming from Niagara as well.
Oh, okay. So we are roughly halfway to our goal. If it's 70%, I mean, and already one third is there. So that puts us at 33%. So there's our math lesson for today. So we're about halfway to the goal. But I mean, that's a big undertaking to get there. So on a local level, let's go to the county. And how does the county benefit from something like this? Same as the state?
Yeah, the benefits are really quite centered locally for this project. And one thing we're going to be doing is negotiating a pilot agreement with Niagara County IDA, and also negotiating a host community agreement with the town of Heartland. And if we end up developing in the town of Newfane as well, we would be negotiating a host community agreement with them too. And we have a number in mind that we would like to contribute to the community, and the breakdown between the pilot and the host community agreement is what needs to be negotiated locally. But for this 350 megawatt project going forward, what we're looking at basically is on order of $1 million a year in new revenues over and above, you know, the taxes already paid by the properties that we would be siting on. And that $1 million a year in additional revenues would be divvied up between the town of Heartland, Niagara County, Royalton Heartland Central School District, Barker Central School District. And if we do develop in the town of Newfane, then the town of Newfane and Newfane Central School District would benefit from the project as well.
Wow.
And that's over and above the contributions for landowners, because people who will be hosting components from having signed lease agreements or easement agreements, you know, they're also going to be getting, you know, more than $2 million a year in payments for hosting project components. So when you look at how these payments increase annually over the first 25 years of operation, we're looking at contributing more than $110 million to the community, be it through these pilot agreements and host community agreements and direct payments to landowners hosting the project components.
Wow. So, and for me, you know, I live in Pendleton. I'm in the Star Point School District, which I know you're not local, so I don't know how much you know about it. But that is my largest tax bill every year, is the school taxes. So you're talking about Heartland, Barker. In concept, if they spend the money right and don't increase the size of the schools or whatever they're going to do, but in concept, it could lower your school taxes. And your county taxes.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing about solar too is, although there's a lot of job creation during construction, so for example, this project would have roughly 300 or more people working in construction on this project, and construction might last up to 2 years. So there'd be a lot of people initially involved in this project, hopefully a lot of them local. Once the project goes into operation, we're only looking at maybe 4 full-time operations jobs. So unlike other industries that bring in a lot of people and, you know, people who may need to rely on utilities and services from the local community and draw on those taxes, this project here isn't necessarily going to put new kids in the schools, or we won't have to build new homes in the community to house the people working on this project, because there won't be that many people. So that means when we contribute an additional $1 million in new contributions to the town, county, school districts, those are really net new revenues that can be used to support the existing base of those jurisdictions.
Man, I'll tell you what, that's something that never even crossed my mind. We all want new businesses like Google or Amazon to come to our community. But with these giant companies come a ton of people to be moving in. Man, you guys got it figured out. That didn't even cross my mind. So in the end, you don't create a ton of new jobs and people moving into the area. In turn, that doesn't put more kids into schools. So ultimately, you're getting the money because the solar farm is kind of set it and forget it almost. With four full-time people, and those four families may already exist here. So you're not overwhelming the schools with a lot of extra kids to pay to eat up that $1 million a year that you're giving us. Man, that's I had to talk my way through that thing to wrap my head around it. That's amazing.
Yeah, it really truly is one of the benefits of the project. And, you know, people ask us, what's it going to do to my home value, for example? And you know, we feel like if you have good schools and, you know, good solid economy locally, you know, with good contributions that are going to maintaining services and infrastructure, these are all things that make people want to live in that area, and that'll reflect some property values. So so we see this as a good thing, and hopefully that's what will indeed happen. You know, we've seen that in other communities as well.
And I did, you know, some homework, and just for the fun of it, and looked at other communities where a solar farm was brought in. And just for the record, their home values have gone up in every single case. Now, it's not, you know, some big giant leap where your $100,000 house is worth a $500,000. That doesn't happen. But the values got go up and not down. So, and that's what we were going to talk about next. Okay, so ultimately, what does it do for me, the guy that either owns the land or lives nearby? How do they benefit? Well, one right now is their property value is probably going to go up. And what's the direct deal that you do with the landowners? I mean, that brings more money into the communities too, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we need to pay landowners to use their land and host components for the project. And, you know, this is a business like anything else. I mean, if we're not paying at least what they make from farming, then they're not going to, you know, sign an agreement with us because they're looking after themselves as well at the end of the day. So it has to make sense for the farmers, has to make sense for the landowners, and it has to make sense for us. But with landowners, we're basically signing lease agreements for people who will be hosting solar panels and inverters, transformers, that kind of equipment. And then we're signing easement agreements because we need to connect the electricity from all these properties that we've signed up to the injection point into the grid. And for those people, we're signing easement agreements to take up maybe 100-foot wide easement across their property. And where we have this infrastructure going through land that's currently used for agriculture, we're going to bury these lines, you know, at least a depth of bedrock or 4 feet underground, so it doesn't impede with the continued use of that land for agriculture. Maybe in some areas that are wooded, these lines might be installed on poles going through the forested areas. But yeah, these are all the things we still need to figure out. And we're hoping that landowners and people will get in touch with us and you know, where they're in one of these corridors where we need to put these lines. You know, we can talk to them more about the specifics of making that happen.
And, you know, I was out, and I told you before we jumped into the podcast, I was out riding my e-bike today and gave a lot of thought to you guys. And, you know, I'm riding my e-bike thinking about that. And I can't think of a downside. There must be someone somewhere that can dig up a downside on this thing. But for the life of me, I can usually look at a situation, pretty much any situation, and figure out, you know, oh, okay, so that's not so good. And I can't think of one. I cannot think of one. Of course, it's not my land. It's not my pharma that I'm giving up. So it's easy for me to say. So like we talked about in another podcast, the where there is maybe a downside is the generational farms that have been doing it forever. And they're not going to be doing that. And that's a big deal to that local guy that has to stop farming and to feed his family. And it's just a lifestyle change for them.
Yeah. And, you know, these leases, whether or not people participate, is completely up to them. And like we mentioned before, people who are leasing their land out for solar, they're still getting a revenue from the solar, and it's a guaranteed secured revenue for many, many years while the facility is in operation. And so, you know, for them, that economic return is still going to be there. I think what's really excited, though, is the notion of solar grazing. And, you know, we've had people tell us, you know, I like the solar opportunity, but for example, I have, you know, kids who are counting on the farm for employment for many, many years, and I don't know what my kids would do if I gave the land up for solar. And so we've worked with some solar grazers to share experiences and stories and to sort of do a comparison. You know, this is what happens if you keep farming. This is what happens if you integrate solar panels on your property and bring on the sheep. And, you know, bringing on the sheep and you know, getting into sheep farming to graze around the solar panels, I mean, that's pretty labor intensive as well, because it's a lot of animals to take care of. For example, if we were to graze the entire 2,000 acres of this facility, you know, you're talking of upwards of 6,000 sheep to manage.
Wow.
And we all know that we import a lot of lamb from Australia, New Zealand. So what a wonderful opportunity to create a domestic product to offset some of these imports and bring even more money to the community.
Man. So we're talking to Kevin. He is the development manager with EDF Renewables. And we're trying to find a downside. We really can't. We've dug around in three different podcasts, and I can't find one, but that's me. So we're going to keep at it and keep plugging away with this. We're going to have a bunch of people from EDF and talk about different subjects and things. So, hey, come on back. Listen to another podcast. Hey, Kevin, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. Maybe a couple of things I'll just mention here quickly.
Oh, yeah,
when we
sure.
talk about downsides, the couple comments we get the most from communities, one of them we addressed already. We've talked about property values. The second one is some people don't like looking at these solar panels. And these solar panels could be, you know, installed as high as 12 feet off the ground at the top of the panels. So there's appropriate setbacks we need to follow from the side of a highway, lot lines. And then we also work very hard at establishing visual buffers. So along a road or where there's a house that's really close nearby abutting solar panels, we can plant, you know, a row or two of trees to visually buffer eventually the site. So the trees we plant might be 4 feet high at first, and then within 5 to 10 years, you're looking at, you know, trees. You'll still see the panels in the background, but it'll
sure.
be a buffered view. So that's one of the main concerns that we get. And you know, we'll go right to neighbors' kitchen tables and talk to them about what the project might look like and show them the different options for visual buffering. The other concern that comes up a lot is decommissioning. So who pays for removing your facility? Who pays for taking all those panels out, all the piles, and restoring the land? And so that is solved by us putting a security before we even start operating the facility in favor of the host towns. And if we're not there to remove and pay for the removal of the equipment, the town already has the money secured in a letter of credit or a bond or something like that that they can
draw upon
and pay for the removal of that facility. So that's another one of the top concerns that comes out when we propose these projects to communities. And we address them by, you know, contributions, significant economic contributions to the community. We have appropriate setbacks following local laws and codes. And by planting visual buffers. And we want to make sure that we're talking to the neighbors, talking to the community, and getting their feedback about the project so we can make it a better project ultimately for both ourselves and for the community.
And, you know, what's interesting is solar power like this at this level is not something new. I mean, we've been doing this for a long time. So when it comes to downsides, somebody somewhere has already experienced them and we've learned from them. And just like you said, the visual buffers and a different and setting up a security to remove it. All the bases are covered.
Yeah, absolutely. And we learn by receiving feedback from the public and communities, and we take that feedback to heart. And obviously, we can't accept every suggestion we get, but where it makes sense to modify a project component in some way to accommodate a local interest, you know, we'll try to make that happen.
Man, that's good stuff. So it's EDF Renewables. And listen up, we have a series of podcasts, and anything you want to know about solar farms and solar energy, we're going to cover in these podcasts. So thank you, Kevin, and we'll be right back.